Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we have author Joseph Forte, and he's going to be talking about many of his books, but one of them is At the Window. Welcome, Joseph.
Oh, hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
I'm really happy to have you here. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
All right, sounds good. I'm really excited to obviously be on the show right now. But a little bit about myself. I'm a grade 5-6 teacher. I was in Niagara Falls. I was born in Canada in a city called Welland in Ontario. I currently live in Niagara Falls, which is only about 20 minutes away from Welland, so it's not too far from home. Some things I like to do on besides writing. Love playing hockey, played all my life, competitive university hockey right up through. And even a little bit now, and I'm a huge fan of music, especially Canadian music. We have some wonderful artists up here in the north, and their music's is wonderful and something to draw on when I write.
Well, how did you get into writing?
Well, I started writing, I think it was about four or five years ago, just at school. Like I said, I teach grade 5-6, so teaching the writing process to students and figuring out how to make them better. I obviously had to get better at it. And I just started with poetry, writing poems about different things, putting myself in different perspectives because I love doing that. I just think it's so unique to tell a story or a situation through someone else's eyes. Everything from a person to insects to whatever. I've had many different poems I've put together. So from there, that went on for about 2 years, and I decided to try my hand at a children's story, and I developed something called, at first it was called The Shining Star, and I wrote it and changed it, and obviously At the Window was the final title of the story, and it was quite a process. It was almost a two-year process from start to finish. So it's, the writing's probably been going on for about 4 or 5 years in total, so.
And what was your inspiration for writing the, was it a poem, or how did you get to the inspiration to write your book?
The idea came, this was after many poems had been written. I'm a big believer and a big fan of just connections with friends, connections with family, and that had a big part in me writing the story. It's about a little boy and the little girl, and he sees a star. The little girl doesn't. His sister doesn't. But without going into too much detail and giving the end of the story away, a big inspiration came from connections. What's that?
Interesting. I said, don't give the story away.
You know, and I try not to do that. It's so difficult for me at times. Everyone's like, "Oh, what's it about?" So it's one of those where you kind of have to read it and find out, unless you enjoy spoilers. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the story. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. I don't like spoilers for certain types of stories. Like a murder mystery or a thriller, you don't tell me anything.
Of course.
Because you don't want to know who done it or who the organization or any of the twists, because that's the fun of the story.
Yeah, it's the whole premise of it, right? And the same thing with this story. I like having a wow factor at the end, and I love books when I read books that have wow factors at the end, and I like to hold on right to the end and then have everything kind of get tied together. I just think it adds the element of surprise and the element of, wow, that's great writing. So that's how I like to write as well when I put things together. So.
And are you a big reader, and what is your favorite genre? Or do you have a favorite book?
I am and I'm not. It depends. I'm very busy with teaching and, just planning for my students. It gets to be really tough to sit down and find some time. In the summer when we have time off, on vacations, love to read. I could sit there and flip through a couple of books for sure over the course of a week or 10 days. But, again, when I get home, I'm very active, always on the move, and I find it very difficult to sit down and read at times. I think a lot of it has to do with the technology that we're accessible to. It's a distraction, but I definitely love a good book, and one of my favorites is my favorite author is Mitch Albom, and a couple of his books, The Five People You Meet in Heaven, and Have a Little Faith, and For One More Day. Actually, those three really stand out, and I wish I read more, and it's something that I always preach to my students and try to get them into the habit and develop it, develop that habit. But again, sometimes things get a little bit busy, and it's difficult. But yes, I do, and he's my favorite author for sure.
Those his books are very touching, very sweet. Is that what inspires you for your own work?
Yeah, I love the way he writes, just in terms of his creativity and his imagination, and how he makes you feel like you're right there and in the book, and the words, the vivid language he uses is phenomenal, and it just changes a story. It makes it more interesting, and that's something that I like to try to kind of mimic and use, and the figurative language, the similes, the metaphors, the personification really make a piece of writing, I think, come to life.
Yeah, I've read a couple of his books, and he's like a painter with his words. He just paints an entire canvas. It's very beautiful.
Yes.
Is your work very visual like that?
Yeah, I like to think it is. I mean, obviously not to his level, but he's on a whole new planet. I only wish I could write, 10% of a tale that he writes, but... Yeah, I'd like to try to be as creative. I'm also writing for kids as well, grades 5, 6, 7, and 8. So, and they're obviously a lot shorter and just have a vivid language. It's easier, I find, it hooks the kids, and it's easier for children to read and to kind of immerse themselves into the book. So,
That's true. Is your book, or is it going to be a series, or is it just a standalone book, or how do you foresee it?
No, it's just the standalone book, and that's the story, and again, it's very open, and it allows for, a lot of interpretation and whatnot. So, a lot of people have said, can you continue it on, or you should write a second book and a third book to it, but I don't feel it. I ended it the way I ended it, and that's how it's supposed to end. So,
I do understand that. I've had that happen.
Yeah.
I have a couple of books that people have asked me to write a sequel, but I have so many other things, books that I'm working on, that it's not that easy. First of all, I'm writing my series, and I don't really think that it's that easy to write a series.
No, it's not. It's almost like it's forced, right? And you don't want anything to be forced, and you just want it to be natural. So there's so many other things to write about, and to maybe take one story a step too far, might kind of compromise it and ruin it. So
That's true. And also there's parts of a series that there's, like I said, I'm writing my first one, and continuity,
right.
And... that you're expanding, you're putting new characters in, you're doing all this other stuff, and yet you have to stick to the original story, too. And, I mean, my hat's off to people who do this all the time. I don't know how they do it, because it's not easy.
No, it's not, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of work involved, and a lot of people don't know the time commitment and what it takes to put together a quality piece, whether it be a short story or something, 15, 20, 30, 50 chapters long, so.
Yeah. Well, every book is a commitment. It doesn't matter if it's a book of poetry or an anthology of short stories or a full novel or a series. I mean, if you're doing it, your heart should be in it. I mean, that's
absolutely.
Writing is.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
So you're a writer, you're a teacher, you're a husband and a dad. How do you find time to do everything?
I'm everything but a dad. My wife and I don't have kids,
you.
But
Sorry, I thought you said you were.
No, that's okay. I mean, I guess I'm a dad to our little dog that we have, but you know what? I just time management. I've like growing up playing hockey and always having to be aware of time and you allot all your time to certain things. I know there's only so many hours in a day, but you kind of try to balance it, and some require more time than others, but you have to make use of your time. So it's not easy, but I wish I had more time for writing. I think that's probably the one that doesn't get as much focus or as much attention in terms of quantity of time, but there are other things that are obviously important in my life that I love as well. So, yeah, I wish the day was longer, but it's not, so we just kind of make do.
Do you have a certain routine when you are working? Do you have a time of day that you like to write and a place that you like to write?
Time of day, not so much, but I guess a place. A place will be anywhere where there's not a computer, internet, any access to technology. I'm all about paper and pencil, at least for my initial draft, to get something down, because I could easily be distracted. Anywhere quiet, although if I'm struggling with writer's block, I'd love to play, like I said, a little bit of music. And just hearing a lyric line or two will just kind of get the creative juices flowing. And, you know, one line could lead to an entire page or two pages and things like that. So I don't have a set place, wherever I feel comfortable with minimal distractions.
When you're writing, everybody has a different method, but when you're writing, do you write it everything like in a straight line, like, or do you bounce around? Do you have an outline? What's your method for creating?
I'll start, like I said, with paper and pencil, usually a little notebook from school. I'll take one of those, but once I have it down, I'll go back and I'll read it, but then things end up in the margins. And then once I type it out, I'll just get it printed, and then the corrections go on, and my thoughts are, there's a pen, and arrows are all over the place, and corrections are all over the place. And sometimes I can't even really follow where it's going because I cram in so much. But it's kind of neat because it's an opportunity for me to show my kids how I've done that, and then I see them do that throughout the course of the year, because it's so funny, you ask them to correct their paragraph and they'll have maybe one or two corrections and maybe a capital here, and they'll hand it in and they'll be like, okay, I'm done. And I'll look and there'll be opportunity for tons of improvements. And then over the course of the year, they develop that habit and they see some of my work. One of the 30 drafts or 25 drafts, I think this one was 30 for At the Window, but they see it and then they see the final copy and then they believe it. And then they go over and they want to just keep adding and adding and slowly but surely they say, hey, that's look at my writing from at the beginning to my finished product. It's so much better. I always tell them every correction makes the story that much better. So if you make five corrections, well, your story or paragraph or piece of writing is five corrections better than it just was. So, the method to my madness, they'll see that and then they'll attempt it as well in their books to their level, obviously. And it's just, it's great to see, and I've learned that in my writing to teach that to them. So it was a great lesson for sure.
That's interesting. And when they, do you read some chapters of your story out loud and then they read chapters of their stories out loud in class?
My story is only 1,500 words. So I will share it. We're ready to start school next week. I shared it last year as I was writing it. I shared it, I think, the first time I wrote this class, the first class that I ever shared it with, while it was in still a notebook. It wasn't even typed out. I think they're going into, maybe grade 9, so I think it was 3 full years ago. But just to see the reaction and how it kind of comes about, and then it just gives them the confidence to want to go and write more. So it's advantageous to me to be able to do this and show them. And in terms of them reading, I absolutely give them the floor. I have a stool in my class, and we call it the hot seat, and I'll invite the kids to come up, and they'll read their work out loud, and they'll see and hear themselves, and they'll realize where their mistakes are, but they don't realize it until they actually hear themselves speak out loud. So it's a great teaching technique. It's a great strategy that we employ, and I have no problems taking a period or two. And at some point, there's 25 kids in my class, and all 25 want to share their work, which
that's
is
great.
A huge bonus. Yeah, and it just gives them an opportunity to go back and fix their work. They might work on, you know, one or two paragraphs for a week or a week and a half, but at least it's multiple drafts. They've done three or four drafts of it, and they're learning the editing process, because that's what I think makes a piece of writing not just good, great, but fantastic.
Do you think that if they learn to have a passion for writing, they'll learn to have a passion for reading too?
I think it goes hand in hand, because as you – ooh, that's a tough question. I guess if you have a passion for reading, you'll end up with a passion for writing. But if you learn to write and you learn, you know, figurative language, and you learn to write and you learn what a simile is, you learn what a metaphor is, you learn how to write a great paragraph, you learn how to use dialogue, then you see it in a book, it might make reading – or it could make reading more interesting – And vice versa. I think it goes both ways. I think it just depends.
Because, you know, there's a lot of things about one of the my issues is that less kids like to read. And my hope is if you give them this passion for creating and doing these stories, that they'll want to read more.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only problem, too, with this is what we're competing against nowadays with the technology and everything that's there. So, I mean, it's kind of neat how e-books are coming out and they're evolving and there's pictures involved and they can see things on the computer or the iPad, so it might make things a little more interesting, but it's not easy competing against, you know, video games and all these other technologically based concepts that they have out now.
That's true. And the thing is that I like it that they are starting to mix it, that the graphic novels and the games are mixed, so some kids will get into the games and then they'll want to read the graphic novel because it's attached to the game, and then there's a book from the graphic novel, so they'll read the book, and then maybe they'll get into the series, because I have heard of kids get into that. But that they're that passionate, Is that rare, or do you think that's happening more and more?
Again, I think it's just different group to group, like being a teacher. Some groups you'll have that are they'll be more engaged in something like that, and others won't. I just think it varies from year to year and child to child. Some find interest in it, and others don't. So it's kind of tough to answer, I guess.
You heard my sigh. We're at the halfway mark, so I thought you'd like to give a little bit, not enough to give anything away, but and not reading it, but just tell a little bit of what your book's about. Not so much that you're giving anything away, but just explain a little bit so the audience will know what it is and what you'd like them to take away from the book once they've read it.
Okay. I mean, I could read the back here, and it probably will be the best, I guess, synopsis without giving the book away. And then I could tell a little bit about what I'm hoping that the readers take away from it. So, At the Window is a quiet, sensitive story that invites readers to consider the undeniable nature of love. Henry and his little sister Emily are orphans who live under the care of Ms. Agnes at St. Peter's Orphanage. One wintry night, Henry notices a bright, shining light tear through the sky, but he's the only one who notices. The following week, he sees the light again, and Henry now begins to think this is more than a coincidence. The burning light sets a spark inside of Henry's own heart, and he begins to search for answers. Patience and an open spirit ultimately lead him to the truth, where the warmth and light fully embraces him. So I guess that's, like I said, a synopsis without giving the story away. And one thing that I want people to take away from it, or the reader to take away from it, is the fact that, I guess, three words, peace, love, and hope is always around. Yeah, I guess that's as much as I can say.
Okay. That's as much as I can give.
Without getting too involved into it, so.
Well, I mean, when you were writing it, did it just pour out of you, or was this something that you were thinking about and you had a structure? Was it like a stream of consciousness that just poured out? Because it sounds like it.
I knew where the story, I knew how I wanted it to end. I always like to think of an ending because I like that wow factor. So I knew how I wanted the story to end. So to get there, it was easy to get there. I mean, the first draft and the final copy of the book are completely different. I'm not completely different, but there's so much more added into the story. But I mean, that original copy, that original base, that skeleton is essential to kind of have it. And then I kind of filled the holes as I went through. But I like to write with the end in mind and know how my story is going to end, and then kind of, okay, how am I going to get there? How am I going to lead it? How am I going to have to drop clues throughout the story that essentially tell you a little bit about the ending, but that aren't so obvious either? So,
when you finish the book, well, I always think of it as sort of like your birthday. When you finish the book, what was your sense of completion?
Right.
How did you feel when you finally put the finishing touches on it?
Oh, it was long. Let me tell you that much. It was difficult, just because your name's ultimately attached to it, and the last thing you want is a mistake or something missing from your book. And you have to, like, I had to sign off on it and make sure. And I was reading it like one word at a time, and that was quite stressful. But once I hit the submit button and said, okay, this is it, it's ready for printing. 200 or 300 copies, I can't remember how many, 250 copies were getting mailed to me, and 10 days later they show up in the mail. I have it on video, just recording, but to see it in a notebook and then see a final copy that's available, and then to see it on Amazon, to see it at Friesen Press, to see it on all these other book depository and chapters here in Canada, to search it and see it, it's so hard to explain.
Yeah. I know.
Very fulfilling.
When you got your copies, wasn't it weird when you got your copies and you're holding it, after all that work, you're holding it in your hand?
Yeah, and to see multiple copies of it, I mean, there was 250 right here, and I said there's going to be people all over the world, and that's another thing, I'm just amazed at some of the people that have actually read it. I've had people in Europe buy copies, people in Australia have purchased them, all over the United States, Canada, I mean, many people around the area here as well, friends, family, and even strangers, so it's just amazing how many people have actually heard At the Window, which is kind of neat, so...
Yeah, that gives you a little buzz, huh?
Oh, it does, for sure. It gives you some inspiration and motivation for the next one.
Cool. Are you working on anything right now?
Yes, I have another story. I originally wanted to have it out before we did this interview. I was expecting something in the summertime, but ran into some difficulties getting pictures put together for it, and we kind of left it alone a little bit, but which is okay. The manuscript is done, and I'm just I have someone lined up to do some of the pictures. I'm just waiting on them, and just putting some finishing touches on the final copy and the manuscript. But I'm really excited about it, and I'm hoping for November, December 2014 release. I mean, it might sneak into. It might sneak into 2015. I'm not too sure, but I'm very excited for it. And it's another story about 1600 words with some pictures in it. I don't like to, I guess they are picture books, but children's books, but more for grades, for sure grades 5, 6, and 7, and 8 will enjoy this story.
Oh, that's so cute. Do you have any readings coming up or an event or anything?
Unfortunately, I do not. Time's limited with teaching and being at school. I had the opportunity to get to a school last year because our spring breaks are different. we're very close to the border, so I had the opportunity to go over the border on our March break, and I got into one school in Buffalo, New York, and it was great. I was a guest author and got to read the story and provided a signed copy for the school and read my story to about 40 or 50 kids and the excitement that they have. It was 40 or 50 people that now heard of myself and my story, and which was neat, and they've invited me back for the following school year over the March break again when we have time off because they're usually in school. But I would love to get into some of the schools, but again, being a teacher, it's very difficult because in Canada and Ontario, we all have the same time off. So the opportunity to get out there and read would have to be into the States when we have different time off. So, and it was a challenge as well. I think I sent out a pile of emails and heard from a school and almost had a second school. So, but I think hopefully with a second story and a third story that, there'll be more opportunities to get there. And I've done a book signing as well in my hometown back in February, I believe. So that was a neat experience.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah, because you could talk to people who are passionate about your book.
Yeah, it was actually funny. It was just I had one lady there with her grandchildren, and the book was $10, and the kids wanted it, and the grandma was like, I'm not too sure. And then she finally gave in. She took a copy. I signed it for her, and I think the next day I received an email. Because my email is obviously in the book, and to contact me, and she was one of the most enchanting books she's ever read, and it was just funny because she was so close to not buying it, and I've had so many other people that thought about it, and then they don't know what they're missing, essentially, do you know what I mean? But then it could also work the other way. They get it, and they'll be like, oh, what's the big deal kind of thing, so it depends, but that was one of the nicest things, and she said, make sure you let me know about your next book, and so it was just funny how close she was to not getting the book for her grandkids, and then ended up getting it and loving it. So it was uplifting for sure.
Well, that's great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We've went through our time. We're at the end. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm really happy. I mean, it was a really fun interview, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
We're going to have a guest on Thursday. Her name is Mitzi Sorrento. She's going to be talking about her book, Darker Edge of Desire. I'd like my live audience to thank Joseph. Thank you, Joseph.
Well, Sherry, thank you very much, and thanks to Blog Talk Radio as well for having me, and hopefully when Always There comes out, we could get together and do this again. So.
Sure, I'll be happy to. Just send me the information.
All right.
Your information will be on my blog on Friday. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Take care.
You too.